Oh my god, two hundred suns and I'm gonna see what I have. Six is in the time for me, tells my three to the man. Three is the coming of these stumps, the pitums and the delays, I am a look at my own, the happy sap and the sun. When is the goal of the best chart, the best new by the best chart, the season of the neighbor wise. So the great registry of sacrifice was going to be performed. We read this verse yesterday, but we didn't read the purport. On the day of extracting the soma juice, which is part of the sacrifice, to notice here, properly and very attentively worship the priest and the most exalted personalities of the assembly. Susamahita, with careful attention. Srila Prabhupada writes in the Krishna book, according to the Vedic system, whenever there is an arrangement for sacrifice, the members participate in the sacrifice, the members participating in the sacrifice offer the juice of the soma plant. The juice of the soma plant is a kind of life-giving beverage. On the day of extracting the soma juice, he needs to very respectfully receive the special priest will be engaged to detect any mistake in the formalities of sacrificial procedures. It appears that the Vedic mantras must be enunciated perfectly and chanted with a proper accent. If the priests who are engaged in this business commit any mistake, the checker or referee priest immediately corrects the procedure, unless the ritualistic performance is perfectly executed. Unless it is perfectly executed, a sacrifice cannot yield the desired result. In this age of Kali, there is no such learned Brahmin or priest available, therefore all such sacrifices are forbidden. The only sacrifice recommended in the sastras is the chanting of the Hare Krishna Sahagya, Sankirtana Prayasi, Dantihi Samhita. The members of the assembly then ponder over who amongst them should be worshipped first. This is called the Agra Puja. Agra Arhana Arham. Who deserves to be worshipped first? So this is it's sort of a formality, but it's not just an etiquette or formality. For the sacrifice to be executed properly, the proper respect has to be shown to the proper person, and then Krishna is satisfied, and then the sacrifice can go well, because the purpose of the sacrifice ultimately is simply to please Krishna. So this is required. So the members of the assembly then pondered over who amongst them should be worshipped first. Since there are many personalities qualified for the son of Vyasadeva was there, and his father was there, Parasara Muni, and so many rishis were there, and not only that, but Lord Brahma was there, and Lord Shiva was there. So many personalities were qualified for the son. They were unable to decide. And this was one of the reasons why Maharaj approached Yudhisthira wanted to perform the sacrifice, because he knew who actually would be chosen, and who, because he knew who the most worshipable person was. And of course, that most worshipable person is yes. Why is he the most worshipable person? He's a supreme person. Everyone else gains their worshipableness or power from him. So how do we know this is true? Krishna is actually the supreme person. It's written in the Shastra.
Krishna said himself.
Many people say themselves. I'm the most worshipful person to worship me.
But he also proves it.
He proves it. They cannot prove it.
Acknowledged by authorities.
Yeah, acknowledged by authorities. And also when one worships Krishna, one feels happy. I know only one person who thought he was the most pious person in the world. In the whole world, he thought. But he only gave 8 lakhs to the temple, so no one else would agree with him. He would have given more, maybe. Here's what's important in the Krishna. Another important procedure, extracting of the soma juice, soma, everyone has to be respected. Another important procedure is that the most exalted personality in the assembly of such a sacrificial ceremony is first off worship. This particular ceremony is called the Agra Puja. Agra means first, and puja means worship. This Agra Puja is similar to the election of the president. In the sacrificial assembly, all the members were very exalted. Some proposed to elect one person as the perfect candidate for accepting Agra Puja, and others proposed someone else. As the great Acharya Jiva Goswami points out, text 15 of this chapter states that the members of the assembly were not astonished at the opulence of the sacrifice, since they knew that King Yudhisthira was a devotee of Krishna. Still, text 18 now states that the assembly could not select the most deserving candidate for being worshipped first. This indicates that many of the brothers present were not fully realized transcendentalists, but they were conventional brahmanas uncertain of the supreme conclusion of Vedic wisdom. Similarly, Acharya Vishwanath comments that the undecided members of the assembly were the less intelligent ones, and not such exalted personalities as Brahma, Shiva, and Dvapayana Vyasadeva, who thought, since today no one is asking our opinion, why should we say anything? Furthermore, here is Sahadeva, who was renowned for his sharp skill in analyzing all sorts of circumstances. He can now appoint the person who is to be worshipped first. Only if someone fails to speak or cannot understand the situation will we speak up, despite no one's having inquired from us. What do you think about that, dealing with things? Because I was reading it, so it was easier for me to follow it. So what the point was, they were thinking, the great exalted personalities such as Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Sri Vyasadeva, they knew who the most qualified person was. So no one asked them their opinion. So they thought, anyway, if no one's asking us, we won't speak. Because they didn't have a compulsion to speak. Most people have a compulsion to speak. So, but they didn't. They were self-satisfied. So, but they had something else to say. If two other points, that Sahadev is here. And Sahadev was very famous for his good discriminatory powers. So he'll say it. So there's no need for us to speak and make the point. But if no one understands, then we'll talk, even though they're not asking us. So that was their mood. So often we like to make the point so everyone will think, oh, very good, very intelligent discourses. So having made up their minds in this way, the greatest personalities remain silent. This is how Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur advises us to understand what occurred in the assembly. And Sahadev was there. And Sahadev began to speak. Certainly it is Achyuta, the supreme personality of Godhead and chief of the Yadavas, who deserves the highest position. In truth, he himself comprises all the demigods worshipped and sacrificed, along with such aspects of the worship as the sacred place, the time, and the paraphernalia. So he's the essence. He comprises all the demigods, who worship and sacrifice, and also he comprises the aspects of worship as the sacred place, the time, the paraphernalia. He's the essential point of sacrifice. Lord Hari, or he calls him Achyuta, the infallible Lord Krishna. Bhagavan, Bhagavan Sakvatam Pati. Arhati he. Arhati means deserves. He is certainly Achyuta. He means certainly. Arhati he Achyuta. Ishkyam, the supreme position. Certainly it is Achyuta, the supreme personality of Godhead, who deserves the supreme position, because he is Bhagavan Sattvatam Pati. He's the chief of the Yadus, he's the chief of the Yadus, and he is Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord. So, what happens next? Sahadev continues to speak. This entire universe is founded upon him. Above the great sacrificial performances, they rest upon him. The universe rests on him. All sacrifices rest on him. And the sacred fires, the oblations, the offerings, and the mantras, they're all acting by his power. Sankhya and yoga aim towards him. The world without a second. That means he is unequaled. And yoga is the practice and Sankhya is the philosophy that goes along with yoga. Or some assembly members, that unborn Lord who relies only or solely, completely on himself, creates and maintains and destroys this cosmos by his personal energies. So who else can say that they do that? Who will even say that? Just if a human, ordinary human being says that, it means that he's crazy. All assembly members, the unborn Lord, first of all, he's unborn. He relies only on himself. He is not getting power from anyone else. And by himself, for his own reasons, he creates, he maintains, and destroys this cosmos. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva don't, all three Lord Brahma creates, but he relies on another, and Lord Shiva destroys, but his power is not his own. So Krishna does this, Achyuta, by his personal energies, in which the existence of this universe depends on him alone. He creates the many activities of this world, and thus by his grace, the whole world endeavors for the ideals of religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. So all the different procedures and activities on this world, in this world, are coming from him. Therefore, we should give the highest honor to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. If we do so, we will be honoring all living beings and also our own selves. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely should honor Krishna. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely, he should honor, such a person should honor Krishna, the perfectly peaceful and perfectly complete soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord, who views nothing as separate from himself. What is the meaning of that? I'll read this, the verse again, and then we'll hear what Prabhupada says. Anyone who wishes the honor he gives to be reciprocated infinitely should honor Krishna, the perfectly peaceful and perfectly complete soul of all beings, the Supreme Lord, who views nothing as separate from himself. So what is the meaning of that? Now that I talked about Brahma and Shiva not wanting to speak, now no one's going to want to talk, maybe. Sometimes this is different.
If you want to give honor to anyone, you should go to that personality who is most highly qualified to reciprocate.
Well, what is it? What did it say about the kind of reciprocation he gives to what you, the honor you give to him? Huh?
Okay.
Not exactly perfect. But he reciprocates infinitely. So what does that mean?
Huh?
It means you give something. What does he ask for in the Bhagavad Gita? Patram, pushram, phalam, dharam. Just a leaf, a flower, some fruit, or some water. So something that's more or less insignificant, but he reciprocates infinitely with that. He even ultimately gives himself to those devotees who offer them those things with devotion, bhakti, paritam. So whatever you want, he will reciprocate with. And if you want only to please him, a good example of him reciprocating amazingly is in the 81st and 82nd chapter of the 10th canto, the story of Sudama Brahmana. So Sudama Brahmana, he what did he give Krishna? Where was he from? What was Sudama Brahmana's place, his city, where he lived? Huh? You see Vrindavan in everything. That, but no. I'll give you a hint. Where Gandhi's ashram is. Porbanda.
My history is bad.
Because you're a Bombay boy. Actual Gujarati.
And even geography.
Siddhama's house is there. But he was so poor that he had nothing in the house to give to Krishna. So his wife went out and borrowed, he gave some chipped rice, flat rice, which is very meager. Very meager, actually. Or four palmfuls, and wrapped it in some old cloth. And Sudama took that cloth and carried it with him. And Krishna ended up taking some of that rice. And so Sudama had brought it to him, even though he thought he saw what opulence Krishna was living in Dwarka. And he thought that this is completely not suitable. This is poor man's food. This is suitable for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord, even though he's my friend. So, and he came here because he was so poor. He didn't have enough food to eat or anything, and his wife had sent him because she knew that his friend was the Supreme Lord. Of course, they went to school together at the ashram of Sandipani Muni, their teacher in Avantipur was Jain. So when Krishna, he took it, and then Rukmini Devi, the goddess of fortune, stopped him from taking any more. And Sudam had come to ask something from Krishna. Actually, he had come to see Krishna. So he didn't ask anything from Krishna. And the next day he left. And Krishna didn't say anything, even though he knew where Sudama had come. And he didn't offer him anything. And then when Sudama walked back and he was near his own place, he saw there was a huge palace there. And he saw that his everything had been transformed, and he had attained the wealth of Indra, the king of heaven. And Porbanda was no longer Porbanda, he was a rich Bandhu. He was the rich Bandhu of Krishna. And even his own body was transformed into a young and handsome, beautiful man, and so was his wife, etc. So Krishna, he gave something so insignificant to Krishna, but the reciprocation was infinite. Infinite, practically speaking. So what we want from Krishna, he'll give us. But if we only want him, he will even give himself to the devotee. So Sahadeva was saying, so he's obviously the person to worship. He's the Supreme Lord. He creates everything. He destroys everything all by his own energy. He relies on no one else. He is the one who's independent. Everyone else is ultimately dependent on him. So that's the definition of the Supreme. that he is the one whom everything else depends upon. Everyone is maintained by him, ultimately. He's the only one who is independent. Everything else depends on him, rests upon him. So Sahadev spoke in this definitive way about Krishna. So having said this, Sahadev, who understood Krishna's power, he fell silent. And having heard his words, all the saintly persons present congratulated him for coming to the right conclusion, and they said, Sadhu, Sadhu! It means excellent, or very good, very good. The king, Narada Yudhisthira, was delighted to hear this pronouncement of the Brahmanas, from which he understood the mood of the entire assembly. Overwhelmed with love, he fully worshipped Lord Krishna, the master of the senses, Rishikesh. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, and this was one of the main reasons why Yudhisthira was holding the Radhasuya sacrifice, so in the presence of all these exalted persons, the conclusion would be reached that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. After bathing Lord Krishna's feet, Maharaj Yudhisthira joyfully sprinkled the water upon his own head, and then upon the heads of his wife, brothers, other family members, and ministers. That water purifies the whole world. What other water has touched the lotus feet of the Lord? Ganga. What panel is that? Two and three? That it shows the descent to all the different places. Do you have good photos for that?
Yeah.
Gomukh?
Yeah, there are a few. Please show the places of
Gangotri?
Gangotri? It's in the Himalaya.
Yeah. It's the first stop after Gomukh.
Mm-hmm.
So this water is so pure and so holy, because it has touched the lotus feet of the Lord. So, after bathing Lord Krishna's feet, what did Maharaj Yudhisthira do? He took the water and sprinkled it on his own head, then upon the heads of his wife. So much respect for the water that has washed Krishna's feet. So he was so happy, because this is one of the main purposes of him performing the sacrifice. And then upon his other family members and the ministers, he was blessing everyone, and they all had to be blessed by the water that had washed the lotus feet of Krishna. That water purifies the whole world. As he honored the Lord with presentations of yellow silk garments and precious jeweled ornaments, the king's tear-filled eyes prevented him from looking directly at the Lord. So part of the ceremony is they washed his feet. Then they presented him yellow silk garment, precious jewels, ornaments. And he was so thrilled to be worshipping Krishna in this way. When he saw Lord Krishna thus honored, nearly all who were present joined their palms reverentially and exclaimed, Jai, Jai! Obeisances to you, all victories to you. Namo Jayati, Namustam. Jitam Sabha Jitam Vitsa. Upon seeing Krishna honored in this way, all Pranjalayat Jana, all the people, Nama, he said, Nama, obeisances to you, Jai, all victory to you, Iti. Then he bowed down to Krishna, Tam Nipatu, Pushpa, Vrishpa. And they showered him with flowers. The flowers rained down from above. That means that there was an approval from because flowers came from all the demigods agreeing that Krishna was that person. So the atmosphere was so sweet and wonderful because Krishna was worshipped. But there was a problem. You know what that problem was? Shishupala. He was very upset with Krishna. He was born angry at Krishna. But then also, he was completely smitten with love for Rukmini before she was married, and Rukmini's brother, whose name was Rukmini, had arranged that Rukmini marry Sisupal. But the last person in the whole world that Rukmini wanted to marry was Sisupal. In fact, she only wanted to marry one person, and she would not marry anyone else. And she decided that if she could not marry Krishna, who she fell in love with just by hearing about him, Bhakti Krishna, from Narada, who visited the palace of King Bhishmaka occasionally, and spoke about Krishna to everyone, and Rukmini heard, and she fell in love with him. And she decided that if she could marry Krishna, she would not be touched by any other man. She would just fast, perform austerities, and give up her life. And if she couldn't marry Krishna in this life, her hope was to marry him in some future life by performing austerities for a thousands of months. Tam satam namasukana bhutya tasyam gatanam paradaivitainam mayasitaram narapangavena sakyam vicharukitapunya. It takes thousands of births, perhaps, to gain the association of Krishna. And Rukmini was so fixed in performing the necessary puja or austerities and gaining the piety to be with Krishna, marry Krishna, that she was ready to fast again and again, birth after birth, perform austerities, and she would not accept anyone else. In other words, she was ready to die as Krishna rather than accept the hand of Sisupal. So Sisupal all the enmity he had with Krishna was compounded by this, by Krishna stealing away Rukmini from him. And Krishna didn't even care. And then all the armies went to capture Rukmini back and punish Krishna for doing this, and the armies of the Yadus defeated them, headed by Balaram. And then Rukmini himself went out and said, I will not come back to my capital city of Kandina unless I be back to some promising. You are all cowards. You ran away. And they all ran away, and they came back because they were so soundly defeated. He thought, wait a second, we're going out to fight for Sisupal, and he didn't even come out and fight. He's just sitting there. Krishna took Rukmini. So Sisupal, he was so inimical with Krishna, actually. And there's something to do with his birth. I don't know the story exactly how described in the Mahabharata, that he was born with how many eyes?
Three eyes,
four, and he had a horrible cry like a donkey or something like that. So then his auntie, his mother, who's Krishna, a relative of Krishna, Krishna's auntie, Krishna promised her that she said, don't kill him, please don't kill him. So he promised that he would tolerate 1,000 insults or something from him.
She was sent by someone that if she puts Sisupal on the lap of the man who will kill him, extra eye and extra arms will go away. So she was putting him on kinds of people.
Yes. And
one day she put him in Krishna's laps, and then his eye and arms disappeared. And she promised, they asked him to promise not to kill him. And he said that he won't kill him and
tolerate.
He insult him, I don't know, I think 100 times or something like that.
So he was going to begin. Krishna was just smiling. That's 4, 5, 27, 38, 92. Eight more. So the son of Dhammakosha, who is Sisupal, became infuriated. What does infuriated mean? Yes, fury means great anger. So he became filled with fury or great anger upon hearing the glorification of Krishna's transcendental qualities, and everyone so happy. So he was so envious of Krishna. And that caused him to always be thinking about Krishna. Because when you're angry at someone or envious of someone, your mind becomes so focused on that person. This is described in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, that this is the process, that the devotees aspire for, is to focus the mind on Krishna somehow or another. Not to become envious of Krishna, or to become angry at Krishna, or fearful of Krishna, like Kamsa was, or envious of Sisupal, but the point being, somehow or another, we should concentrate our minds on Krishna. This is the essence of bhakti, especially spontaneous devotional service. But Sisupal, he stood up hearing when Krishna was glorified. He stood up from his seat and became angry, and he was waving his arms to attract everyone's attention. And he fearlessly spoke to the entire assembly the following harsh words against the Supreme Lord. So we'll read the purport here, and there's something very interesting that the purport contains, especially the words of Vishnu Bhakti Thakur. So the purport writes, in that meeting, King Sisupal was also present. He was an avowed enemy of Krishna for many reasons, especially because of Krishna's having stolen Rukmini from their marriage ceremony. Therefore, he could not tolerate such honor to Krishna, and he could not tolerate the glorification of Krishna's qualities. Instead of being happy to hear the glories of the Lord, he became very angry. He stood up and he waved his arms, so everyone just stared at him and stopped looking at Krishna. He got everyone's attention, then he began to speak. But here's what Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Speak very harshly. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions that the reason Sisupal did not object when Sahadeva proposed Krishna for the Agni Puja is that Sisupal wanted to burn King Yudhisthira's sacrifice. Because we should note that they were deciding who the Agni Puja was meant for. And everyone agreed that it was going to be given to Krishna. And then everyone worshipped Krishna, Yudhisthira worshipped Krishna. And then, and only then, after the ceremony was completed, that's when Sisupal stood up and began causing a parliament scene. Because if Sisupal had argued earlier against the Krishna's receiving the first worship, and another person had been selected, the sacrifice would have proceeded normally. Therefore, Sisupal allowed Krishna to be selected. He waited until the worship was over, and then he spoke up, hoping in this way to demonstrate that the sacrifice was not spoiled, was now spoiled, because the wrong person had been chosen, because he was envious not only of Krishna, but he was also envious of Yudhisthira. Because the essence of envy is envy of Krishna. And if we're envious of Krishna, we'll be envious of so many other people too, anyone who has more than us. So Yudhisthira was going to be the emperor. And Sisupal didn't like this at all. So he was even hoping that a fight would start. And then when Chakriya's fight someone will pull out a sword, that someone will shoot someone, and there'll be blood. And the blood in the sacrificial arena would contaminate it, and then the whole sacrifice would be ruined, either by them agreeing that Krishna shouldn't have been worshipped, and now the sacrifice has been spoiled, and blood spilled in the sacrificial arena. So his hope was also to ruin the sacrifice. Then he would ruin the endeavor of Maharaj Yudhisthira. In this regard, the Acharya quotes the following smriti reverence. Puja yatra pujanti pujanam cha viti krama. In the place where those who are not to be worshipped are worshipped, there is offense to those who are actually worshipable. There is also the following statement. Pati bannatihi sreya puja puja viti krama. Improperly understanding who is to be worshipped and who is not to be worshipped will impede one's progress in life. So Shishupal, this is what he said. The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has indeed been proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now become diverted by the words of a mere boy. Okay, what did he say? Here. Just two parts say. The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has now been proven true. What does he mean by that? Because this has been said a few times already, this point. What does he mean by that? Not exactly.
And it's going to
not exactly. Because through the power of time, something that shouldn't have happened can happen just because it's time. Something that shouldn't have happened, that couldn't have happened, has happened because that's just what happened. It's time, fate. So time makes everything happen. So he's saying that even though something shouldn't have happened, wise people have listened to this boy, this young boy Sahadev, because usually it's the boys who are supposed to listen to the wise elders. But in this case, look what has happened. The wise elders have listened to the young boy. So this proves that time is more powerful than anything, because at this particular time, something that shouldn't have happened. So, time rules. Time rules everything. Since the intelligence of wise elders has not become diverted by the words of a mere boy, Sahadev, he's not wise. So time has made something ridiculous happen. The influence of time. O leaders of the assembly, you know best who is a fit candidate for being honored. Therefore, you should not heed the words of a child when he claims that Krishna deserves to be worshipped. How can you pass over, huh?
That's one or two.
Here we go. Anyway, you can tell me, you can be the referee. How can you pass over the most exalted members of the assembly, the most sages, who are dedicated to the absolute truth? They are endowed with power of austerity, divine insight, and strict adherence to severe vows, sanctified by knowledge and worshipped even by the rulers of the universe. How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, how does he deserve your worship? Does a crow deserve to eat the sacred rice cakes that are being offered in a sacrifice? Krishna is like a crow. So, look how he was speaking. The great commentator, Sri Goswami, this is the purport, has analyzed Sisipal's words as follows. The term Gopal means not only cowherd, but also protector of the Venus and the earth. Kala means protector also. So what the acharyas do often, they call it, by the mercy of Saraswati, there is a second meaning to what this criticizer is saying. And the second meaning is a meaning that actually is the opposite of the first meaning, and glorifies where the first meaning, or Sisupal or others, are attempting to criticize by breaking the words and understanding them differently, the opposite meaning comes. So here Srila Swami is going to show how Sisupal, by the mercy of Saraswati, the goddess of learning, he's actually glorifying Krishna. So the term Gopal means not only coward, but also, there's a term that comes up very often, Dipal, means the protector of all the directions. Similarly, Kula Pamsana means he has a double meaning. Sisupal intended to mean the disgrace of his family, which is with each meaning when divided at the above. It may also be analyzed as Kulapam Pamsana as opposed to Kula Pamsana. In Sanskrit, you can break up the sandhi or the combination of the words differently. Giving it a totally different meaning. Kulapam indicates one who indicates those who prattle with crooked words contrary to the Vedas. And Amsana, derived from the word Amsyati, means destroyer. In other words, he is praising Krishna as he who vanquishes the misguided and frivolous speculations about the nature of truth. Similarly, the Sisupal wanted to compare Krishna to a crow with the word kaka. These words may also be divided into ta akaka, because the word has a long A, so that A, yata, the A can also go to the second word, kaka. In that case, according to Srila Srivaswami, the word kaka is a combination of ka and akla, which indicates material happiness and misery. The third Krishna is akaka in the sense that he is beyond all material misery and happiness, being on the pure transcendental platform. Finally, Sisupal was right in saying that Lord Krishna does not deserve merely the purudasa rice cakes offered to the lesser demigods as a substitute for the heavenly beverage of Soma. In fact, Lord Krishna deserves to receive everything that we possess, since he is the ultimate proprietor of everything, including ourselves. Thus, we should give Lord Krishna our life and soul, not merely a ritualistic offering of rice cakes. So the acharyas love to do this. Right, he didn't mean it from the, no, he didn't mean those things. But definitely, Sisupal was envious of him, for sure. But the goddess Saraswati entered his tongue and changed his words to have positive meanings, even though he meant them in a negative way. That's the idea. Allowed him to be a positive glorified, because she's the devotee of Krishna, she wants Krishna only to be glorified. How he can do this? How does one who follows no principles of the social and spiritual orders or principles of family ethics killed them? His own uncle. He's so bad, he's killed his own uncle. Who is excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically, steals, dances with the wives of others, who has no good qualities, how does such a person deserve to be worshipped? See the Prabhupada comments. Actually, Krishna does not belong to any caste, nor does he have to perform any occupational duties. It is stated in the Vedas that the Supreme Lord has nothing to do as is described in him. Whatever has to be done on his behalf is executed by his different energies. Sisupad indirectly praised Krishna by saying he is not within the jurisdiction of the Vedic conventions. This is true because he is the Supreme Personality of no Godhead. He's Godhead. But he has no qualities means that Krishna has no, because he said that he has no good qualities. He has no qualities. Means he has no material qualities. He has no good qualities. He has no bad qualities. He has no rajagun, sattvagun. He's transcendental. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He acts independently. Yes. He doesn't care for the conventions of social or religious principles. He does as he likes. This is what we continue. Yayati cursed the dynasty of these Yadavas, and ever since then they have been ostracized, thrown out by honest men, and they have been addicted to liquor. How then does Krishna deserve to be worshipped? Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives the inner meaning of the words of Sisupad to show that he continued unintentionally glorifying Lord Krishna and his Yadava dynasty. Even though the Yadavas were cursed by Yayati, they have been relieved of this curse by great saints. And consequently, they have been raised to a position of royal sovereignty by such persons as Kartavirya, that was all mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Kartavirya Arjuna. Thus they have become absorbed in Pana, protecting the earth. Considering all this, how does Krishna, the chief of the Yadavas, deserve useless worship? Not he deserves opulent worship. These Yadavas. Abandon the holy lands inhabited by saintly sages. Like, where were they living before? Mathura. And have instead taken shelter of a fortress in the sea, a place where no Brahminical principles are observed. There, just like thieves, they harass their subjects. Gathering momentum. He's not only criticizing Krishna, his family, everyone. Purport. The word Maharshi Sevitam Dishan, holy lands inhabited by saint sages, allude to the district of Mathura. Sisupad went crazy because of Krishna being selected the supreme first worship person in that meeting, and he spoke so irresponsibly that he appeared that he had lost all his good fortune and he was going to very soon lose his life and his head. Sukadeva Goswami continued, bereft of all good fortune, Sisupad spoke these and other insults. So only some of them are recorded, so we're not going to be able to count them, because that was probably just 20 there. But he might have accumulated some previously too. But the Supreme Lord said nothing. Just as a lion ignores a jackal's cry. Have you heard of a jackal? Where?
Yeah.
In Mayapur. There's so many.
And so many khalis.
Huh?
And so many khalis.
Really? Where do they live?
In the forest.
In the forest.
Oh, in the forest there.
In the Bengali, yeah.
You know, everyone lives there. There's horses, there's cows, there's pigs, there's jackals. No monkeys, though. What to do? Do the cows and horses live in the wild?
No.
Yeah. Or they belong to some people?
Yeah.
See, it's funny when you're walking through the forest and you see the herd of horses wandering around. Big ones. Those are the Arab.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, the Krishna just stood there, just as a lion ignores the jackal's cry. 85, 86, 87. The jackal says, oh, but a lion, roar! Completely different. By hearing such intolerable blasphemy of the Lord, several members of the assembly covered their ears and walked out, angrily cursing the king of Chandi. Because anyone who fails to be in the place where he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotees, as the verse, will certainly fall down, bereft of his pious credits. Then the sons of Pandu became furious, and together with the warriors of the Matsya, Kaikeya, and Srinjaya clans, they rose up from their seats with weapons poised, ready to kill Sisipal. So Sisipal was, there was going to be bloodshed, and that was going to ruin the sacrifice. But undaunted, he didn't care. He was so angry and so envious. Sisipal then took up his own sword and his shield in the midst of all the assembled kings, O Bharata, and hurled insults at those who sided with Lord Krishna. At that point, the Supreme Lord stood up and he checked his devotees. He then angrily sent forth his razor-sharp Sudarshan Chakra and severed the head of his enemy as he was attacking. So he raised his sword and shield, he was going, he was attacking Krishna. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains the Lord's action as follows. If Lord Krishna had done nothing, there probably would have been a savage fight on the sacrificial ground, and thus the whole ceremony would have been drenched in blood, spoiling the sanctified atmosphere. Therefore, going to protect the Rajasuya sacrifice of Krishna's beloved devotee Yudhisthira, the Lord immediately severed Sisipal's head with his razor sharp disc in such a way that not a drop of blood fell within the sacrificial ground. So it appeared that Krishna was angry at Sisipal and killed him because Sisipal was attacking him and Sisipal had insulted him and Krishna was getting his revenge. Actually, what was in Krishna's mind, because he could have let the devotees kill him too, but what was in Krishna's mind was to protect his devotee, Yudhisthira. So Krishna's mind is very hard to understand, and Krishna's mind is always wonderful, and it is always dominated by his desire to exchange loving affection with his devotees and to protect his devotees. Kavya Pratijanihi Name Bhakti Punashati. So when we actually hear about how Krishna acts, then gradually our trust in Krishna, because everyone in this world is feeling shelterless, in fact. Everyone in the material world is shelterless and hurting because of the lack of shelter. The loneliness, the fear, the anxiety because of the lack of shelter. Everyone experiences this. Some are better at making believe that their life is wonderful and everything, but actually no one's life is wonderful. Everyone's life is going to end, and even before, and so many people, everyone who we love, life is going to end. So it's not it's not a pleasant position to be in the material world, and because of illusion, and our desire to be independent from Krishna, we see, we allow ourselves to be forgetful, and that's the mercy of Maya. Because of our desires, we don't want to be aware of the realities of the situation. So Krishna allows his maya, or we invite his maya in one sense, because we want to be unaware of reality. We forget our shelterlessness. And therefore, at the time of death, all the illusion of our vulnerable position is stripped away, and there we are. And it's terrifying. Terrifying because we see clearly that we have no shelter. There's an old saying that there are no atheists in the foxholes, meaning when you're in the battle and fighting the soldiers, they all very quickly turn theistical. and they also turn to sense gratification too, but they turn theistical because they know that they could actually die. So we need a shelter. And when we hear of the qualities of Krishna and his dealings with his devotees, how his mentality is to care for his devotees in such a way, and when he does things, it's for the pleasure of his devotees. When we hear that, it gives us strength and courage and faith that we also should, we could become devotees. We should become devotees, because Krishna takes us care of his devotees. And then we start. And Jiva Goswami actually says that the beginning of bhakti, it starts with a doubt. Bhakti starts with a doubt. What is the doubt? We hear the stories, we listen to the devotees, and we start thinking, maybe it's real. Maybe there is a Krishna there. Maybe there is someone who's going to take care of me. I surrender to him. Maybe it's true. Maybe the devotees are right. That's with that doubt. That's the beginning. So, Krishna keeps Shishupal in such a way, because Krishna has unlimited power, unlimited intelligence, so he does things so that many purposes are satisfied at once. So he kills Shishupal in such a way that that there was not a drop of blood was spilled. And he was also, it sounds like he was inimical to Shishupal, but actually he wasn't even inimical to Shishupal. He was actually sending Shishupal home, because he was this, there was the curse, which is described in the canto of the Bhagavatam, by the gatekeepers. The gatekeepers were cursed by the four Kumaras to have to take birth, and they had accepted the curse of the four Kumaras, but they said only one request: please don't let us forget the Lord, let us always be fixed in remembrance of him. So because of Shishupal's envy, because of Ravana's fear and envy, and because of Haranyakashipu's envy, and anger, they were fixed in deep and full remembrance of Krishna. What happened next? When Shishupal was thus killed, a great roar and howl, went up from the crowd that was supposed to come from you, instead it came from me. Taking advantage of that disturbance, the few kings who were supporters of Shishupal quickly left the assembly out of fear for their lives. Oops. The effulgent light rose from Shishupal's body. And as everyone watched, that light entered Lord Krishna, just like a meteor falling from the sky to the earth, went into Krishna's body. So this was seen by the whole seventh canto of the Bhagavatam as an explanation of that verse. Because he was so, and he said, how come Shishupal, his soul went into the body of Krishna? Whole seventh canto is an explanation of that. Okay, so tomorrow, Krishna willing, if I continue, we'll read a little purport to that verse. And if we continue, that was the 45th verse. And the chapter is almost finished. And then, I think before, I must we'll even finish in this chapter. Any question?
This is Jayam Vijay were promised to come back to the spiritual world. And here it's described that he goes into Krishna's body, which is considered a very low or very even abominable
Just an exit, a grand exit. That wasn't the end. And also, no one should have been able to see this either, because it was it's on the spiritual level. Same thing happened with Agasura. Agasura's soul went into the body of Krishna, and Brahma saw that. But in the presence of everyone, that means that Krishna wanted to see everyone to see this, so that they. It's also, in one sense, a chastisement of the Brahmavadis, the Mayavadis, as if the demons get appear to get Sayuja Mukti merged into the body of Krishna, and this is what they're trying performing all the austerities to get. It doesn't seem like a proper. Proper goal. This is just what we perceived at that moment.
Like Jayam Vijay came back and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is still at Sagarmada.
You've heard that. I think it's in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. I can't remember exactly reading it, but maybe.
That was the fourth, because then they become devotees. That was the fourth birth.
That's what it is. If I remember correctly, it's. Let me know. They were terrible. But they didn't blaspheme with the devotees like he did. That was the one thing that they had one good quality, and that was a negative what they didn't do. They didn't blaspheme, criticize the Vaishnavas. They did every other terrible thing, but not that, and therefore Mahaprabhu could face them and save them. But I can't remember if I've read that in Chaitanya Bhagavat. I can't remember it.
I think Sisha Prabhu was quoted a couple of times.
Yeah, but did he give the.
He must have given Bharat Prabhu.
But that's it's common, you know. Hare Krishna.